T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, y'all, welcome back. This is an interesting take on the song. Oh, wow, it's getting remix. Speaking of remixes, I don't know, maybe that's not a good analogy. Speaking of remixes, Michael Kiss. I don't know if that was like a good segue. But I guess, like, if you were to say what the remix of Benjamin Solak would be, I guess it would be Michael Kist. Like, what's the exact opposite? Not nearly as good looking or young or bright. I guess the exact opposite of Benjamin Solak is Michael Kist. So I guess that makes a lot of sense why you guys make such a great podcast together, is you are polar opposites. He's successful, handsome, and you are, you know, Michael Kist.
All right. Well, Ben's a nerd, so let's calm down a little. I would say that the remix is my new Josh Allen take compared
yes.
to my old Josh Allen takes. Well, we can go with that.
Okay. I'm into that. So it was fitting then. I thank you for stepping in and making my show better. Michael, first and foremost, glad to have you on. It's been a little while. How's COVID treating you? You got any cool stories to tell us?
Cool stories about COVID? That's a dark subject to be like, hey, what's going on in the world?
I'm the dark comedian here, man. This is what I bring to the table. I bring weird conversations that make light of things that nobody wants to make light of.
Look, this is what I did before and after COVID. I locked myself in my office. I watch film. I podcast. I learn football. I do things like that. I change opinions based on new information. That's happening a lot this season because football is chaos. So that's my story, man. Just trying to learn more about the game and then ride these roller coaster waves of each week of the NFL season.
So should we just go right into Josh Allen, or you want to talk Carson Wentz first? I'll let you. It's my show, but I'll let you talk about whatever you want to talk about.
We can start with Josh Allen, because you know me, and maybe some people listening know me, because I know I did a lot of Bills media before the Bills Eagles game from last year.
Mm-hmm.
I often said that, you know, every halftime, right, there was this conversation on Bill's Twitter about whose fault it was that the offense wasn't putting up a bunch of points and whatnot. And a lot of people pointed the finger at offensive coordinator Brian Daboll, and I pretty consistently defended him and said that it was Josh Allen. Well, I think now you're seeing, as Josh Allen has taken a significant step forward, at least in the first two games. We're still kind of in a wait and see, you know, play a you know, real tough defense and kind of see how that plays out. But right now, there is no problem with the Bills' offense. Josh Allen is slinging it, looks fun as ever. Daboll is dialing up some beautiful stuff in the run game and in the pass game. The chemistry with Stephon Diggs is there. They got him a real wide receiver one. He trusts them, and he makes some great plays for him. So I'm in on Josh Allen this year, and especially in fantasy, man. He's going to be like a top three fantasy quarterback no matter what.
Yeah, and, you know, like these types of matchups, this Goff-Allen matchup, if this was week one, I might like frame this matchup as quarterbacks who are potentially going in opposite directions. What we saw from Jared Goff towards the end of last season, it seemed like they had figured out where he wants to go with the ball, how he wants to win. And Josh Allen looked like, especially towards the end of last year, that he would start to take the step. And then all offseason, all anybody had to talk about was that Houston Texans game. And maybe unfairly, it's a playoff game on national TV, and that is what sort of sits in the minds of fans. And much like that throw to John Brown in week one that he missed, a lot of things about Josh Allen are the egregiousness of one or two plays that just take away from all of the other good stuff that he does throughout a game. And I think that Houston Texans game, that's maybe no better example, is you unravel that game with two plays, the fullback throw and the little pitchback thing that he did, and the rest of that game and the primetime throws that he was making sort of just get forgotten about. I can't really remember another quarterback that gets viewed more for the handful of mistakes he makes in a game that just completely negate some of the really great consistent stuff that he's shown on film. To you, through two games, Mike, like, where to you has been the most impressive? Maybe it's a stat, maybe it's a mechanical tweak, maybe it's a confidence thing. Like, what's the one aspect of his game through two games that maybe has made you really say, like, wow, this makes me feel differently?
Yeah, I think, you know, you kind of talked about the Josh Allen roller coaster, the Josh Allen experience. Because it has its peaks and valleys. And like, we saw a little bit of that in week one. He had two pretty bad throws there in the red zone, but then the third one right after that was a beautiful one, and people all wanted to focus on the big miss. But the overall picture is he's eliminating a lot of those big time mistakes, and the small ones haven't cost them yet. So I don't think they're as highlighted right now because they haven't really played, you know, a couple of tough teams. But overall, I would say the biggest thing I'm impressed with, I expected his deep ball passing to regress to the mean, right? Like, that's just his low deep ball accuracy just wasn't really sustainable as a stat. He is way better than I thought he would be on the deep ball. And I think a big thing of that is recognizing that he can put more touch on the ball and be more accurate that way and give his receivers a better chance at hauling it in when he puts that touch on the ball. So I think the mechanics have gotten better. I think the touch has been better. And I think along with that, his confidence has risen as they've gone along with this. And like, he was already a fun player that can make some crazy, crazy good plays. I think he's doing a better job of limiting the mistakes.
You mentioned the name Brian Daboll, and you know, I think I agree with you that Daboll, especially in Allen's first 2 years, tended to be the scapegoat of we're really just uncomfortable. I don't know, scrutinizing the quarterback as if expecting or wanting to say we want more from the quarterback was like gonna get back to him and he was gonna be mad at you or something. Like, it was this weird complex that, gosh, everyone is so harsh on him, so I can't even have a little criticism about maybe something you saw during the course of a game or the course of a couple weeks. And so therefore, Brian Daboll was forced to sort of wear the hat of you're the guy that's going to get the blame, even though it's probably not your fault. So through two games, what has impressed you most about the Josh Allen effect being a lot of it based on the Brian Daboll effect, which is really solid play calling, diverse, you know, I think personnel settings. But maybe the more so thing with Brian Daboll that I've been most impressed with is, I don't know who has a shorter memory, him or like Josh Allen. Like, the play last week in that Miami Dolphins game, they go back to the well. Josh Allen throws an inaccurate pass to a wide open John Brown. They run the same concept. Next play, it's a touchdown. Like, to me, you have to have an incredibly short memory as a offensive coordinator and quarterback in that moment to just say, you missed it, but I don't care. We're going back to the well.
Yeah, it was a switch vertical release, and Brown had flattened the first one, and they kind of missed. And they were like, no, we can dial this up again. We got this. And they got exactly what they wanted on that. So that was a great job by Daboll. I've been really impressed by the creative way they have gotten Josh Allen involved in the run game. Like, they're kind of, Baltimore East, at least, you know, talking about the divisions when it comes to that. So I was impressed by that in week one. And look, some people are going to use this as a knock on Josh Allen, but he has like one of the highest rates of throwing to wide open receivers like in the league right now. And you can attribute a lot of that to Daboll. And not only that, guys that, you know, like Stephon Diggs, that can separate against man coverage. So Daboll finally has some real tools to work with. You're seeing the product of that. And with the leap forward from Josh Allen, it just makes all of it click so much better. And all those questions about Daboll are kind of going away. You know, it's that thing with a young quarterback. Everyone wants to believe he's a star. That's not always the case. But that fan base will always defend him to the death until absolutely proven wrong, right?
Yeah, at Michael Kist, NFL. Michael Kist here joining me on the Wester Hotline. You can hear him on BGN Radio. Him and Benjamin Solak do a great little podcast, if you ever heard of it. Mike, you know, I guess I find it funny because this conversation is leading me to think about Brandon Bean in this whole thing, Bills general manager. And, you know, we talk a lot about, well, Sean McDermott, what a great job Sean McDermott's with this roster. What a great job Brian Daboll's. What a great job Josh Allen has done early in the season. All of this, though, is made possible from Brandon Bean. And you talk about that separation, and we talk about how that can be schemed up. But frankly, this is a team that decided, okay, we drafted Josh Allen, and our thought process is let's surround him with big dudes who can go up and catch the football. Benjamin, you know, Calvin Benjamin, Andre Holmes. I can't believe he was even a number two receiver on this team. Anyways, to now, where you have three guys who are, you know, I don't want to say one, two, three, but probably top eight in the ability to separate at the line of scrimmage. And Miami learned that the hard way, trying to run man against this. Is this going to be a group, and this is maybe a two-part question. A, Brandon Bean, impressive that he was able to try to find these types of receivers and really go from a scorched earth of, hey, we're going to get all these big, slow, fat guys who can go up and get the ball, to we want small, quick separators of the at the line of scrimmage, to also at the same time, man, like, yes, that's on Brandon Bean, but I don't know. Let's start with the Brandon Bean question first, because I'm getting ahead of myself. Brandon Bean's role in all this, how impressed are you of the complete 180 they've made at the type of receiver they believe Josh Allen could be most successful with?
Yeah, so McDermott gets a lot of credit for, like, drafting, like, the defensive side of the ball and whatnot. But I think when you take in the overall picture and what they've done from a contract standpoint and rebuilding that franchise from the moment that Bean stepped in, they got some bad contracts off the book. They made some really smart signings. They drafted really well. And then also it looks like they've hit on their quarterback, too. Like, what has Brandon Bean done that has really gone wrong or been costly for the Bills? He has rebuilt that team from scratch, and I think he's already proven to me coming into this offseason that he was the top 10 GM. He's making a really good case for himself to establish himself as a top 5 general manager in the league. I don't think he gets enough credit, you know, from the national media as far as the rebuild job that he has done from top to bottom. That is a really talented roster. For me, last year, if they had better quarterback play, this is a real contender. With better quarterback play this year, you're kind of seeing the fruits of what he has built there, because this is a legit team that is just talented, coached well. Like, even the small signings, like even the less heralded ones. Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, you know, and McDermott gets credit for that too. Bringing those guys in, you got like the best safety tandem duo in the league right now. At least they're playing like it. So it's at every level of the offense and defense, bringing guys in and being super aggressive and bringing in Stephon Diggs to give yourself a true wide receiver one. I give Bean a lot of credit for that.
All right. I'm super interested because, you know, I had an opportunity to talk to Mark Schofield earlier in the show, and I basically told him, I want you to tell me about Carson Wentz, but leave a ton of meat on the bone because Mike's going to join us later. And he's like, oh, I'm not going to say anything then. I'm just going to let Michael have his meltdown and have his cake, eat it too, everything on the show. So 2 weeks in, maybe in the same way you don't want to overreact to Josh Allen's successes, maybe in that same breath we should say maybe it's a little too early to harp on the failures of Carson Wentz. Is that a safe stance to take?
Yeah, I think it is, because all Carson has to do is kind of regress to the mean of what he's kind of been for 2018, 2019. You can leave 2017 out of it, but just like the past 2 years, if he like regresses to the mean, he's going to prove like a lot of people like silly as far as just his play goes. Cause I mean, I still think he's a viable, good starter with a lot of skill. There's a lot of things going wrong in Philadelphia. Carson is definitely one of them. The offensive line was a big problem in week one, but yeah, a lot of the problems with the Eagles right now stem from Carson Wentz's inaccuracy, his mechanics, which, you know, national media has been all, every quarterback minded person has broken down. We understand that his mechanics are shot right now. But, I mean, he's never had the cleanest mechanics, and he's been a pretty doggone good quarterback. So I think a lot of it is confidence and chemistry with his wide receivers, which, you know, it's on Wentz to build. So I don't think it's a backwards hat leading to some of the leadership issues there. I think the issues are much deeper and more complex and nuanced than that. But, again, all Wentz has to do is just playback to the mean. Like, this is a bad two games, but he had these games last year. He had him against New England. He had him against Seattle. He looked terrible in those games. And then he bounces back and goes on a four-week run and brings his team to the playoffs with nobody's that wide receiver. We're freaking out about it because it's week one, because it's week two, because you're 0-2 and your playoff chances are at 11%. So I think it's overstated, but I do think that most of the criticisms are warranted, and a lot of the breakdowns of mechanics are definitely valid.
He didn't look good here in Buffalo in that win either. That passing offense did nothing, and if it wasn't for that Miles Sanders run and a couple of long runs from Jordan Howard, like, maybe we're talking about, like, an entirely different season for the Eagles if they don't come to Buffalo and win midseason last year.
I'm gonna kick back on that because, number one, Josh Allen didn't look great that game either.
No, he didn't.
Very, very windy. Not a lot of downfield passing. That, to me, was a Doug Peterson win, right? He schemed that up. I think Wentz did a good job working with inside the offense. And then at the end of the game, when he had to pull it down and make a couple runs for some conversions, he was able to do that. So I don't think he was a negative in that game. I also don't think he won that game, but it was a pretty neutral game for Wentz there.
So you make another good point about the athleticism, his running ability. Do you maybe, and I always look at Josh Allen in this light, because I think what his running did early in his career for Josh was bridge the gap of his development as a passer. And you can hide some of the deficiencies in accuracy and just overall ability of your weapons by being a good, effective runner, and there's really no doubt that Josh Allen is, you know, right there with Lamar Jackson as maybe the two, and I would say Kyler Murray's there as well, as the three guys that you look at that are elite level runners of the football at the quarterback position. Carson Wentz has almost never really been thought of in that same light, and injuries have certainly maybe stopped him from the willingness to be a solid runner. Do you believe that maybe some of his issues could be, I don't know, hidden a little bit if maybe he was able to tuck it down and run and be a little more effective, just to continue moving the chains for that Eagles offense to give him and his receivers more opportunities?
You know, I don't think it's so much the ability to run. I think it's the ability to be explosive in short area movements, and I think that's definitely something that's been stacked to him. We saw his, you know, pocket escape ability both in his rookie year and in 2017 after the ACL tear and the back injury. He's not nearly as explosive, and he's having problems, you know, avoiding sacks in that area. And you're right, he did use that and is probably still using that as a crutch. And what it leads to is, you know, when you're in the pocket, he needs to have cleaner pocket management. He's really bad at managing a messy pocket, but, like, he can make these throws off platform and do all these things. They're great. But overall, you watch the Washington game, and yeah, the offensive line was a problem, but Wentz's pocket management was bad, and he was depending on his athleticism to bail him out of situations that, quite frankly, just aren't working for him anymore. So he has to clean up the small stuff now because he doesn't have those explosive short area movements that he's used to having.
Well, if you are a quarterback with a history of injuries that have likely hampered some of that dynamic athleticism, yeah, that's going to be on display with that defensive front that Washington has. I mean, they have some of the best athletes at the defensive line position outside of Aaron Donald in the league. That team can make a lot of good athletic quarterbacks look pretty mediocre. And I think that's the one thing I'm going to take away, is I don't think I'm there yet to overreact that Carson Wentz all of a sudden just is a bottom-tier quarterback in the league. A lot of the charts we're seeing through 2 weeks has him at like 31, 32 in EPA and some of the other stats that a lot of people put a lot of credence into. So if you and I are having this conversation on November 26th, do you believe, only because this team drafted, astoundingly, drafted a quarterback in the second round, I don't want to say that the stopwatch already started, but it kind of feels like it has to have started. The second you drafted somebody in the second round, it almost feels like the pressure is beginning to mount, even though maybe it shouldn't this early.
I go back and forth on that because you look at how long the leash is for other franchise quarterbacks around the league. Like, I think a lot of this is Philly media invented.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Mitch Trubisky is still starting in Chicago. Like, yeah. Who would have guessed that? How long have they, you know, ridden that terrible train? And it's still happening. But, you know, they also don't have, like, they didn't pick a guy in the second round. They brought in Nick Foles, but, you know, we'll see how that goes. But I do think, like, if the Eagles are staring at, like, they're about, you know, they're a game away from being 0-3 and a 2.5% playoff chance. So if you're staring at in November something like, you know, 3-7 or 3-8 or something like that, I think the voices are going to be overwhelmingly loud for Jalen Hurts to come in there. Now, whether he comes in for a stint and then, you know, it doesn't go well and he gets pulled, how long is the leash on Hurts before Wentz comes back in? Is that a message to Wentz to try to motivate him to, you know, live up to his contract and then try to build for the next year? I don't know. But, I mean, if they're not a playoff team and that's obvious, then I'm pretty confident in saying that Jalen Hurts will start at least one game this year.
Yeah, it's a very – listen, at if nothing else – the whole thing playing out in Philadelphia is really great entertainment value. It's, you know, for a certain extent, like the questions being asked of Doug Peterson, like, hey, like, what's up with why does Carson Wentz look so crappy? Like these are questions that the head coach is being asked 2 weeks into the game. And he's kind of like, and I was seeing takes like, man, Doug Peterson's such a jerk. Like, he's got nothing to say other than, yeah, good question, dude. And it's like, you're a head coach being asked why your quarterback literally stinks through two games. What are you supposed to say? Like, Doug Peterson's in a really tough spot, but at the same time, injuries to me is something that you can't blame on a head coach, on a general manager. I just, Michael, I've never seen through the last three years, this team be the most snake-bitten team from injuries that I can just remember. I just don't remember a team going into a season from, what, May, June, July? Did you guys get bad news every single month about a very important player either on the offensive line or the defensive line just getting injured? I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah, over the past 3 years, it's been abysmal, and they've tried changes to the medical staff and everything like that. You mentioned the heat on Doug. I mean, Doug's always kind of been a little testy after a loss, and I can tell you he's in a bad mood, hasn't slept, all that stuff. That's just kind of who he is. And, yeah, some of his answers have been kind of crap, but, like, what do you really want the guy to say? I think the Jim Schwartz pressers have been more revealing, and, you know, he's taken more accountability, so juxtaposed to Doug, you know, makes Doug look a little worse. But at the same time, kind of like how I mentioned with Wentz, you know, number two overall pick, it's a very long leash. A Super Bowl winning coach in the NFL might have the longest leash in the history of leashes. So I don't think Doug's on the hot seat, and I think he knows that as well. But, yeah, I mean, he's at a spot now, and Philly media is awesome because they ask some really tough questions. Those questions, if they go 0-3 against the Bengals, are just going to ratchet up. And Carson Wentz comes out there and says, you know, I've never, you know, my confidence is sky high in this team. Well, you use that card this week. If you lose, you can't use that card the next week. And these questions are going to start getting some serious national attention. But that's Philly, man. That's the Philly circus. You know, that's what we signed up for. So, you know, buckle up, enjoy the ride, and get the clicks, I guess.
Yeah, no, I hear you, man. And clicks is what we do it for, right? Before I let you go, the last thing I probably should have, before getting into Carson Wentz, going into the Jared Goff situation, because I am really interested in your take on, because I do think this matchup on Sunday, Bills-Rams is probably, I don't want to say it maybe the best matchup, I think the best matchup obviously is Ravens-Chiefs on Monday night, but if you were to make an argument about another really top-tier matchup this week, and maybe what we'll learn from whoever wins this game, what is your take on Jared Goff, having the opportunity to see him last week and kind of knowing a little bit more about this Rams team than maybe I do at this point? Where are you on Goff now with the changes that have taken place in the offseason and what we know about McVay in changing a little bit of what he is in that offense is?
Yeah, Jared Goff is a real boy again, and we'll see how long that lasts. I think, you know, I was critical of McVay. His offense has been stale to me from the end of the Super Bowl run season, where they put up 3 points in the Super Bowl, to the next year. I think things got really stale with that offense. I think they're playing fantastic, serious, creative, you know, football this year, and, you know, Goff's success is a product of that. And, you know, Goff can have a top five single season, right? He has that ceiling, but when the bottom falls out, it falls out hard. McVay's done a really good job with keeping him protected. They run the most play action in the league. Now, here's where the problem comes in for Goff, right? His issue is when he has to move off the spot at the top of his drop, only slightly, when he has to go to his second and third read and he doesn't get a clear picture. We saw this, you know, against the 49ers last year, against the Steelers last year. When he gets bogged down in his progressions, that's when he really struggles. That's something that Buffalo is fantastic at doing. I mean, they did it to Tom Brady last year. You confuse Tom Brady, you're doing something. Buffalo is really complex in their coverages, and they're super sound. They're coached up well. I think they can give Goff fits. So we're really going to – this is like the litmus test for me, for Goff, to see if he can handle this from Buffalo. Because if he can, then, yeah, the Rams are legitimate contenders. If he can't, well, that's the Bills' defense, man. They're going to do what they're going to do.
All right, Mike, before I let you go, now that you like Josh Allen, people are going to want to know where they can find your work. So why don't you tell the people where they can find you?
I think they wanted to find me anyway when they hated me. It's at Michael Kist, NFL, that's K-I-S-T. Put in Bleeding Green Nation into any podcast app, and also the SB Nation NFL show into any podcast app, and you can hear me talking on there.
Awesome, Mike. Appreciate you, brother. Enjoy the weekend of football, and I'm looking forward to your takes as the season goes on, man.
Thanks, brother. Good luck Sunday, man.
Appreciate it. You too. Michael Kist there on the Western Hotline. So, yeah, you know, today we gave an opportunity for some takes on Bills and on quarterbacks. And, you know, I think Mike's point about this Rams team and the test that the Rams face against a really good Bills defense this week, I do think that the NFL fans, whether it's Bills or just NFL fans in general, I think this game is kind of sneaky in that I do think you're going to learn more about the league and who it could be at the top of the league by the end of the season from this game. NFC team versus AFC team. Young quarterback versus young quarterback. Up-and-coming play caller in Brian Daboll and established, you know, young offensive mind in Sean McVay.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
There is a lot to likely learn from this matchup Sunday. So that is why I think if you're a Bills fan, you really have to be excited, because anytime you have an opportunity to learn something about your football team, about your quarterback, and especially when you start the season against the Jets and Dolphins, these are better opportunities to say to yourself, okay, this is real. Like, I'm ready to get hurt. Right, like you're ready to buy in. And not that I think, if Josh Allen comes out and throws for 300 yards again, throws 3 touchdowns, doesn't throw an interception, and the Bills win by 10, 14 points. The takes are going to start, and they're going to start going crazy. And I'm ready for that. Like, I'm ready to see a guy be able to throw 3 straight 300-yard games. I've been pounding the table for that. And I know it's an ambiguous number, 300 yards, right? The fact that we don't really have to talk about that as a benchmark anymore, I still think is fooey. Like, we're going to talk about it because it's a benchmark of successful teams, right? Successful offenses, capable quarterbacks. It was only a real topic of conversation because the quarterback here could never get to it. But now that he can, the conversation is shifting towards, well, they need to get to a 300-yard passer too. This team has a 300-yard passer. Well, like let's do it. Like, let's watch that every week. I think if you can get to 300 yards, it's a benchmark that says your team's going to be successful almost regardless of what the score is. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to this Sunday for a lot of reasons. I'm excited to see two offenses go back and forth. I'm good if the Bills win this game and the Bills defense lets up 27 points, 28 points, 30 points. Because I'm going to expect this Bills offense to be able to keep up with that and beat a team who can score 28 points on you. They did it last week. So yeah, I'm welcoming more offensive type games. I'm ready to watch guys run up the score. Like, I'm good with that. I mean, I'm fine with, you know, the Bills winning in defensive battles, but I'm just not really open to this team watching week in and week out win 17 to 16 games and relying on the Titans kicker and Marcus Mariota, or relying on historically bad kicking, which is what the Bills really benefited from last season, is historically bad field goal kicking from opposing teams. Historically bad matchups against bad quarterbacks last year. I'm ready for them to see a quarterback on the other sideline put up a great passing day and it not matter because your quarterback played better. That's what I'm excited to see, and that's what I'm most looking forward to on Sunday, is can you have the better quarterback? They did the first 2 weeks, but that's not saying a whole heck of a lot. And frankly, you can make the... Listen, Ryan Fitzpatrick's bawling right now. Bawling! That Thursday night game was impressive. I didn't even know he had that streak going into the game. 27 straight completions or some crazy thing over the last two games. Fitz is bawling right now. Will he regress? Undoubtedly. It's inevitable. The sun will set. Fitzy will regress. Those are things that we can say in the same light. But I'm ready to see a young quarterback that people at least respect. And it's not to say that nobody respects Ryan Fitzpatrick, but I guess what I'm saying is I'm ready to see a quarterback and an offense with a play caller that everyone says, yeah, if they score 35 on you, yeah, it is. That's what they do. They've got players. They got a good quarterback. They got a good play caller. But the other team's got a better one. And that's what I'm trying, that's what I'm hoping to see come this Sunday. And those are the storylines I'm going to really be paying attention to. All right, I'm going to take a quick timeout. On the other side, we're going to hear from Bills head coach Sean McDermott. He met with both Howard and I yesterday and had some interesting things to say. So I'm looking forward to hearing, well, you should be as well, of hearing Sean McDermott break down this matchup a little bit, give you some inside information, but more importantly, talk about ways that this team can put themselves in position to win this week and get to 3-0, because I think to get to 3-0, the Vegas team that plays the New England Patriots this weekend, that is a game I'm paying really close attention to because that's the Bills' next opponent, but I'm really interested to see if Vegas is for real. That we should learn more about that matchup in New England this weekend, obviously as they head to Vegas next week. All right, quick timeout. Other side, Sean McDermott, Bills' head coach, joining in the program. We're going to hear back from when he joined the program yesterday here on WGR. Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday here on WGR. Nate Geary here. We are bringing you more of Sean McDermott, who met with the media this week. And here's Sean.
I know. I think it was Matt earlier in the week asked you about like pre-snap motion and stuff like that. I want to ask you about like when you see so much when they do like a lot of bunch formations and trips and things like that. Just how much more buttoned up do you have to be on communication? Like how much stress is that put on your DBs to make sure that they're always communicating? And then how much does it help to have guys who've been together for a few years now on your end?
Yeah, the communication piece is real as well as the continuity. I mean, the continuity piece, we just, you know, because of the injuries that we've had on the defensive side up to this point, we haven't been able to have the continuity we've wanted. So I think that's been a little bit of a wrinkle that, you know, we didn't anticipate, but it is what it is. And that's how things roll. So, but the communication piece is necessary and required. You know, quiet teams, quiet defenses in this case don't win. And we've got to make sure we're a team that communicates and in fact over communicates.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Morning, Sean. Kind of lengthy injury report this week. Do you have any final statuses of guys like Milano and Edmonds for this Sunday?
Yeah, we'll take a good look today, Marcel, and see where they are. They've been limited most of the week, so I want to take another look at them today and just have a better feel here.
All right, thanks.
Sure.
Hi, Sean. John Scott. Good morning. Whoops. Sorry,
shaking. Morning.
I was curious from a coaching standpoint, the balance you have between allowing a guy to properly develop at their own pace, understanding everyone develops at a different pace, while also understanding it's a results now business and needing to see results immediately.
Are you referencing a specific player or just saying generally?
Just a generally, yeah. You know, not everyone's playing is the same in development. So as a coach, how do you balance between, you know, knowing that you need to give some guys more time and being, you know, understanding and accepting of the growth while it may not be at the same pace as other players?
Yeah, it's like, you know, urgently patient. I don't know if that's a word or whatever, or two words or a line, but yeah, you got to be urgent because, as you mentioned, you know, it's a day-to-day business. But at the same time, that urgency serves you well, I think, in this league and most of the time in life. And yet, you don't want to eliminate options either because someone doesn't you know, get it during the first or second year. And so it used to be, hey, by the second year, we need to know. But now I think I've seen some cases where it takes into that third year. So, you know, I think each case is individual. And part of it is because how some of these guys are wired, but also part of it is where they come from, the schools, the coaching, the culture they come from. So it's that's where it needs to be all hands on deck inside of our building. And we've got a developmental team that gets to know these players and serves them off the field in different ways. We've got obviously our medical staff, our sports science staff, our strength staff, and then we have the coaches. And then all the while, you know, Brandon and his staff are watching as well. So it's got to be a healthy balance. And again, an all hands on deck type approach.
Are there certain positions that you've seen can make that jump quicker from college to the pros and others that you just understand we're going to have to give this guy at this position more time?
Yeah, generally speaking, there's certain positions that are easier than others to make the transition from college to pro ball. It just, again, at the end of the day, it depends on the individual as well, though.
Thanks.
Sure.
Hey, Sean, I noticed that John Brown popped up on the injury report yesterday. Was that something that was scheduled for him to be limited, or did something happen in practice to him where he had to lose some reps?
Yeah, he had a little soreness there in the foot, but overall, I'd say a blend of both.
Okay. Do you think he'll be all right for the weekend, or?
I do. I'll get to know here in a little bit more, Joe, as I see him out of practice today. But I'm confident at this point that he's trending in the right direction.
All right. And just one other thing. I know John Feliciano has earmarked that week 4 game against Vegas with his Instagram post forever ago. What is his outlook looking like, especially with the 3 weeks about to be done with him?
Yeah, I don't do social media, Joe. So, I'll have to communicate with John somewhere other than social media, I guess. But I'm joking with you. We'll see. I mean, he wants to get out there. He's chomping at the bit to get out there. He's a competitive guy. I love seeing him when I'm in the training room and in the meeting rooms. He's one of the first guys in our team meetings in the morning. So it's, it's just in due time at this point. We want to make sure we're protecting him, number one, because we can't put a guy out there who's not ready either. So it'll be a balance here.
All right. Thank you.
Sure.
Hey, Sean, Matt Fairburn here. I know, you were asked the question about Ed Oliver and Aaron Donald, and certainly making comparisons is, not something you like to do, but I wanted to ask you, as somebody who's coached defense for so long, how you've seen that position evolve to where guys like Aaron Donald and Ed, who maybe aren't as big as they would, that position would have been in the 80s and 90s, have been able to make an impact on the game and get noticed. It's not just those two. There's a lot of guys at that spot that are a little bit undersized. What have you noticed about the evolution of that position?
Well, it's changed. I mean, and when you, I think anytime a player like Aaron Donald comes along, it raises people's awareness that a person of that stature, if you will, can play it and can play at such a high level. I think everyone wants, high weight and speed. And certainly he's talented in a lot of those areas, but he's not the biggest guy. Right. But, and then with that comes, okay, well, you can now look at a guy like Ed as he's coming out, you don't know him, and say, hey, let's keep our minds open to the fact that he could be a good player at this level. Because I think a lot of people just say, well, he's not big enough, and just, they make generalizations. And at the end of the day, they don't know the size of the heart and the man. And that's, to me, a big part of it as well.
What about the value of the position? How has that changed since you got in the league? Because now you hear people talk about Donald as maybe the best defensive player in football, maybe the most valuable player, on the defensive side of the ball. And that's from a position that not all the time was thought of that way. Usually you thought about defensive ends or linebackers, and now people are noticing the value of that spot.
Yeah, I'll give a lot of credit to where I was raised in this game, being in Philadelphia with Andy Reid And our philosophy there, I mean, we put a lot of value in that defensive line position. You know, not as much into other positions, but for sure the entire defensive front. I mean, we spent a lot of high picks on defensive tackles, defensive ends, naturally there. And so that's been a part of me since I've been in the league.
Thank you, Sean.
Sure.
Hey, Sean. I was talking to Mario Addison yesterday, and I asked him about his impressions of Jordan Poyer, thinking, you know, a guy that's pretty much known for his leadership ability, another captain, talking to him a little bit about him. And he said he's noticed, you know, it's not the biggest things that he does, but just the little things that he does that really make him stand out as a leader. Is Jordan kind of one of those guys that you point to when you're talking to guys that, you know, recruiting them to come here or talking about coming here? You say, look at his story and what he's been able to do and how he's developed since he's gotten here.
Yeah, Jordan, man, just he does a lot of good things, you know, excuse me, probably not the most celebrated player before he got here, and even still probably not the most celebrated player, but he just does so much for our football team, and it's right in our wheelhouse of what we value. He's available, he's dependable, he communicates well at a key position like safety. He can play in the box, he can play deep, he blitzes well. So, you know, I know there's probably some that are bigger household names than Jordan Poyer, but to me, he's just right for us.
Thanks, Sean.
Sure.
More from head coach Sean McDermott after a quick timeout. You're listening to Sports Talk Saturday on WGR. Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday here on WGR. Back to head coach Sean McDermott.
Hey, Sean. Tim Graham here. Hope you're doing well. Question, I guess it's a Josh Allen question, but pertaining to anybody, really, whether it's Mitch Morse or Stephon Diggs. When you have a player who's playing so well and really feeling it, what is the sweet spot of letting him go and ride this wave versus feet on the ground? And I don't necessarily mean from a Monday to Saturday thing. I mean, like during the confines of a game. What's that sweet spot between letting unharnessing that athlete, but also having him not get too far gone?
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone needs a little bit of a balance as far as that goes, right? Whether you're playing really well or you're struggling, everyone needs a sense of or a feel for what is versus what isn't acceptable. And, you know, I think when you subscribe to that 1/11th approach of, hey, not, you know, we got to do my job and then trust my teammates around me to do their job, you get into trouble when you try to do too much. And then the trust part is huge, Tim, with the longer you're around a player, the longer the player's around the coach, and the culture, the environment, I think there obviously becomes a bigger understanding for how things are done. And then that trust builds. And the more that trust builds, the more you can, you know, let them loose a little bit, you know, if that's the words I think you use, let them loose. So, you know, we have a lot of trust in Josh, and you know, he continues to grow and develop with a lot of football yet to be played. So it's a continual, like it is with all of our players, a continual education and guidance on how things work and how this league works. To be quite honest with you, you've been around the league, and you can't take this league for granted, and you have to always, always, always respect the league.
Yeah, Josh is the obvious guy, you know, to reference there because his numbers are so historically good. But yeah, in terms of a general athlete, whether it's Jordan Poyer or whomever, Deion Dawkins, being hot and being able to harness that, I guess how powerful can that be when you as a coach with your experience can harness that? What's the power of riding that wave?
Yeah, well, sometimes coaches can be, you know, our own worst enemies. We overcoach, right? And that affects a player. So when you get to know your player, and that to me is important, where you get to know your person, who the player is, and you understand what they need best to compete at the highest level, that's not the same for everyone. Some players can take on more. Some players need less. How does a player handle success? You know, the week before, some can handle it. Some haven't been able to handle it the next week. And how do players bounce back from a bad game? And so that's all part of being a good, to me, position coach and coordinator, because that's building that self-awareness is important as you set them up for next week in terms of trying to play their best game.
Thank you, Sean.
Sure.
Hey, Sean, it's Kim Jones. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you, Kim.
Thanks, Sean. I'm just wondering if there's something about Stephon that you couldn't have or wouldn't have known before he was part of your program that particularly stands out to you, either as the person, the player, or perhaps a combination therein.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination, Kim. Obviously, we've played each other. I coached against him a few times and had a lot of respect for Stephon that way, but hadn't, you know, because we weren't working together, didn't really know the person as well. And I mean, he's a good person and he plays with a tremendous amount of competitive fire and energy. And I expected some of that, but the positive energy that he's brought in practice even to our football team is great. I think it's rubbed off on our football team for the betterment of our football team. And so I think that's been cool to get to know him in that way.
I know this is a softball of a follow-up, but I'll do it anyway. The story from the other day where, you know, he wants to get Beasley and Brown more involved. Brown's telling Daboll, keep feeding Diggs. They can't handle it. I mean, from a wide receiver group in particular, you got to love that.
Yeah, unique. But again, part of who we are, our culture,
yep.
You know, and bringing in unselfish players. You know, it's got to continue though. At the same time, it can't just be for the first two games. There's a lot of football ahead of us and a lot of hopefully good moments ahead, Kim, but also there's going to be adversity and we've got to be able to stay with that mindset as we move forward as a team here.
That was Bills head coach Sean McDermott. Thanks to all my guests today, Sal Capaccio, Mike Tenier of Pro Football Network, also to Mark Schofield of USA Today, also to Ben Baby of ESPN and Michael Kist as well. Thanks to the guests, and thanks for everyone for listening. You can hear me tomorrow starting 8 a.m. on Bills pregame, leading you up to the Bills kick, which will be right here on the radio home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550. So for me, Nate Geary, talk to you tomorrow here on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.